And so I'll go from that, I think, to, I have no idea. Yes, Anne, you do. I was going to say I have no idea of the time, but I do. And that's, you know, when you know you're starting to lose it as a writer, you're getting older, you know, and you've forgotten your glasses. I've lost my pair of glasses, and so I had to get these. I had these from the drugstore, and anyway, I'm getting absent-minded, but time, yes. Well, this has to do with time. It's called Book of Beginnings. I wanted to write something about cells and wound up writing this. Before you were a cell, dividing into cells and more cells, before blue, deepening and unwinding, inside blue, before blue-gray, before the envelope of morning, before opening the crisp envelope of morning, before afternoon and afternoon's picked threads, before evening, before the scattering of evening's fish scales, before crumpled dark, before tarnished dark, before glove-soft dark, before world not yet world, all undone and unmade, thick and ancient, furred by weather not yet, creased and lined, rock and water, linen thin water and rock, unseamed, bulky, dense and smooth, not birth, not death, both icy and steamy, sounds not yet sounds, darkness before darkness and light before light, beginning and ending, ending and beginning, woven and braided and wood smoke fragrant and not wood smoke fragrant, shot through with glistening and murmuring, unmurmuring, cloud of murmuring, also glistening, linen thin water and rock, rock and water, unseamed, furred by the weather, not furred, lined, creased, steamy and icy, smooth, not birth, not death, all undone, done, made and unmade. Now, you are the world dividing. You are day divided from night, night from day, minute from minute, hour from hour. Time begins sliced into now and then and meanwhile and later, so a story can be made of it. Your story will have other stories inside it, but one story, the familiar story, will separate itself and become a plot full of rising action and falling action, and other stories will become indistinguishable subplots, so that telling them apart will be the same as separating water from water, or separating water from air, or air from water, or separating the waters of the firmament from the waters below. You are dark, inside dark, and within this dark, intricate contraptions of darker darkness, night being, sorry, non-being. Things have their places, your place is behind them, but your wish is to soften them, call them back to what they were, what they could have been. This is what you try to say as light begins, grows, diminishes you. Day with its extravagances, you take command, expose dust in the corners. But there's something to one side that needles, a time before this, before the smear on the mirror, before tinkering, before the ululation of a siren, before scarlet, before latches, before eyes, before opening and closing, before the pecking of this, this, this. You are spaciousness. You reach and keep reaching without meeting resistance. This is what it is to be above all things, to be wide and unsullied, yet also to gather, gather and let go. The work of the wind in its passing, no need to possess anything. In the spaciousness, there are many cupboards, empty, empty. Clouds glide over earth, loosely and without purpose. You are clarity and distance, without clutter, without pockets made for nickels, crumbs, paper clips, or strips of paper from fortune cookies, or words on strips of paper, or making, or scissoring, or question or answer, or wind sifting the answer when the question has been forgotten, only spaciousness. You are depth and more depth, earthing and earthed, and silence about to burst. Hear the grass, new blades, grass and grass and grass, shoving forward, clover nodding through, muscling into the world, grass, ferns, sedges, a loose scatter of colt's foot. On the branches of the tree, hundreds of small red pagodas forming themselves into leaves, above the spoon tip of goldfinches, a yellow wing daubed with black, and swallows pulling at the edges of air. When they die, you'll bring them back into yourself, cover them, remember them. But this isn't the time. This is the time of damp soil, its metallic scent, and buds about to unsleeve themselves. Smell, taste. This is where they begin, where they rise. Through you, everything becomes known to itself. Fire. You are what you embrace, heat in its thousand costumes. So you consume, thriving on beginnings, a tirade, then a benediction of embers, blackened remnants, ash, a layer of velvet, dressed up as beauty when it's merely wreckage. Endlessly spending, losing, spending more, all that is born in you is fluid, slipped and slipped and slipped from one thing to the next, sliding over and under whatever is firm and solid when nothing is firm or solid. You have the power of undoing, unmaking, glint and murmur and rinse, and the cool beginning of silver. Water. A sound at the threshold of hearing turned inside out. A lover seeking a way in, a way through, sleek and glimmering as rain and not rain, but brook and river and lake and ocean, unceasing and open. An answer withdrawn and reinvented into another answer, rolling and cresting and slapping sand, pulled back, never slow enough to hold, to be held, the beating at the rim of the world. You are making yourself. Beginning, ending, beginning. So my daughter had a textbook, a biology textbook, and so I was studiously looking at the diagrams of cell division and how it worked, and then something else altogether happened. But I thought, you know, I thought one could actually write a book that had to do completely with cell division. I thought the whole thing will be cell division, and so there, you know, there may be how many poems? 20 poems, and then I realized you can't do that, or I couldn't do that. So I went to something else. So I guess this is the, I was thinking of the beginnings, cells and their beginnings, and this has to do more with cells and their endings. It's called A Slant. The font is quite small, and my glasses are from Shoppers Drug Mart, and so sometimes I can't see what I'm reading, and that's why I'm a bit, you know. So bear with me, though. A slant. Some days he is quite lucid. He thinks about thinking, what it is to be, what it is to have some of the thinking erased. Thinking a slant, knowing he used to be able to think differently. Cities of thought vanish. Each day, whole cities. He thinks about the way we try to stand apart from our thinking. Sometimes we look down on our thinking from above, being objective, dividing the rational from the irrational. He tests himself, thinking. He imagines God thinking. It's not God he wants to think about. He thinks about the bacon hissing and curling in the frying pan. The worst thing he can imagine is not being able to think clearly. not thinking clearly, is one of the worst forms of pain. He has yet to enter the city of pain, but he can see its towers and domes, and beyond, the city of oblivion. He gazes at the ducks on the tabletop of the estuary instead. And I'll end, I think, with I think I'll end with this. Did you ever see a Life magazine? Did you ever keep Life magazine? Did you keep them in the furnace room? I'm just curious. You know, people kept them. They kept them in the basement. There. Thank you. My parents kept Life magazine, and they put the Life magazines in the basement. And this, of course, dates me, but these were Life magazines of the Vietnam War. And they were incredible. The pictures were just incredible. And it was as though when I was looking at leafing through these magazines and then leafing through them again and then leafing through them again, you know, as a girl, I think that the photojournalism of that time was amazing and not the sort of thing one gets perhaps now to the same degree, though, you know, there were two journalists, quite brilliant ones, who were just killed in Libya. And so I wanted to read, for the last two poems, I wanted to read these. The whole series is called Life Magazine. And this, on the facing page, it's the photograph. I write about the photograph. And on the other side, it's the photographer, because I was very curious about the stories of the photographers, too. So there was one iconic photograph that led me back to all the rest. And this one, I'm sure, as I read, some of you will recognize the photograph. So it's simply called Photograph. She closes the magazine, index finger marking the place, opens it, the monk still burning, Saigon, 1963. Someone had called the photographers the night before. In the morning, two Western correspondents were present. Two monks doused Thich Khang Duc with gasoline, set him on fire. When he died, they couldn't fit his body in a coffin. This isn't shown. Only the monk sitting as flames sweep away from his face, arm, lap. A car nearby, hood gaping, monks and nuns at a distance. Plastic jug of gasoline. A man on fire, not making a sound. Afterwards, his heart, untouched plum. And this is Photographer. It seared him after the fact. 6 or 8 rolls of 35mm film, a sequence from the beginning, shock in the monk's eyes as his face caught fire, through to the blackened corpse at the end. How he was prepared and not prepared. How the monk remained still throughout. Stink of gas and burning flesh, people wailing, prostrating themselves. Later, at sunset, a vision of Buddha seated in the sky. If not for the photographer, John F. Kennedy wouldn't have had the picture on his desk the following day, wouldn't have spoken to the U.S. ambassador to Vietnam, about to leave for Saigon, trying to stop what had already begun. The years of what followed, and the photographer's belief he'd had a hand in it, in someone's death, as if he'd picked up the plastic jug that morning and poured a clear stream of gasoline over another man's head. So, thank you for listening.